The American government loves to lecture other countries around the world about the rule of law. It happens literally every single day. But there's a great irony here because whistleblowers in the United States, and especially national security whistleblowers, have no rights. If you go public with evidence of waste, fraud, abuse, or illegality, you risk being prosecuted under the Espionage Act. Invite me for a cup of coffee someday, I'll tell you all about it. What ends up happening to national security professionals who do the right thing is that they lose their livelihoods, they lose their pensions, and in many cases, they lose their freedom and their families. But whistleblowers keep coming. Why? Because it's the right thing to do. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. I've been looking forward to speaking with our next guest for quite some time. Nate Kane is a U.S. Army veteran and cybersecurity engineering expert who served as a government contractor for more than two decades with service at the Pentagon, the FBI, the National Security Agency, the Drug Enforcement Administration, and elsewhere. He's a patriot. He's a strong Christian, and most recently he was a candidate for Congress from the state of West Virginia. Like all whistleblowers, Nate's personal integrity has been of the utmost importance to him. His faith teaches that the truth shall set you free, and he believes, rightly, in my view, that telling the truth under difficult circumstances is the only right thing to do. In 2017, while working at the FBI, Nate discovered that FBI and Justice Department leaders were refusing to pursue criminal cases against Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, effectively obstructing justice. This was just months after the FBI appeared to take a side in the 2016 election, supporting Hillary Clinton and beginning the false narrative that Donald Trump was a Russian agent and that the Russian government was somehow influencing American voters. It was then that Nate blew the whistle to the Justice Department Inspector General and to the House and Senate Intelligence Committees. As I'm sure you can guess by now, the FBI almost immediately began to violate his civil rights. He was put under surveillance, the FBI raided his home, confiscated his property, victimized his family, smeared his reputation, and then leaked his identity to the press. This dragged on for almost 5 years, and in the end, he was never charged with a crime, nor was his top secret security clearance ever suspended. But that's how government works. Ruin the whistleblower professionally, personally, financially, and then just hope he goes away. We're very happy to have Nate Kane with us today. Welcome to the show, Nate.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Nate, you and I have a lot in common. We were just two guys serving their country and trying to do the right thing. We saw evidence of wrongdoing and we reported it. And then the entire weight of the U.S. government fell on our heads. Tell us your story from the outset. You were doing work at the FBI, and then what did you see?
Well, I was there as a contractor and a subject matter expert for cybersecurity, and I came in one day and overheard a conversation that honestly I wish I had not heard, but it was one that involved a cover-up, involved senior leadership at the FBI, and somebody had seen transcripts of a conversation that had occurred on the seventh floor where they were going to essentially shut down a lawful investigation on the basis of political reasons. And that's something that I can't abide by. When I took my oath was to the Constitution, support and defend the Constitution against enemies, all, you know, foreign and domestic. And there were things that were being discussed, words like treason were being thrown around in this conversation. And they had evidence and things like that that they were going to shut down because they felt that Hillary Clinton was going to be elected. And so they were worried about reprisal from her. And that is no basis for equal justice under the law. In fact, it's exact opposite of that. And so, you know, if there is a legitimate investigation into somebody, no matter what their political background is, it needs to be equal justice. And that was the problem that I had, was that I saw a politicized FBI, and I don't believe that that is a good thing for America. I think a politicized FBI is something that's very dangerous to our Constitution and to, you know, to our country.
Nate, you did exactly what you were supposed to do. You went to the Inspector General's office and then to the oversight committees. Frankly, you should have received a whistleblower award for that, but you didn't. What happened next?
So I did go through the IG, the Department of Justice IG, Michael Horowitz. Actually, I was very nervous about that, to be honest with you, because many of the people who were in my chain of command, you know, there was a problem. So originally I reached out to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, and I reached out to them and spoke to one of the senior staffers to the chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. That would have been Devin Nunez at the time. And after speaking with their, you know, their senior guy, he asked if I'd go back in and get more information. So I did, and I came out, and then eventually I got kind of left twisting in the wind with this information that I brought out at their request. And so I ended up then going and reaching out through a lawyer to DOJ IG Horowitz. Again, like I said, I was a little nervous at the time because, you know, I didn't know, you know, where he stood on things. You know, he was appointed by a Democrat, and I was concerned because this issue, you know, had political implications. But I will tell you that he was a stand-up guy, and he actually fulfilled his oath, and he did everything he could, you know, to protect me, including giving me anonymity. So I was grateful for that. Eventually, it took up almost a year to get through that process. And once we got through it, I had protection under the ICWPA. In fact, I was the first ever, whistleblower to utilize the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act with the DOJ. And I was given permission to take that all of the information to both the House and the Senate Intel Committees. So I did. And they asked if I would testify, to which I refused because, honestly, this was kind of stuff that, I was concerned that it could put my life at risk. And so I didn't see the point and need for it because I was taking documents that had already been validated and verified and had already been given a designation as an issue of national security, of urgent concern by Horowitz. I want to say it was 4 months after I completed my disclosures, the FBI raided my home. And 16 agents ended up at my home going through it, taking all of my electronics. They outed me publicly to the public. This happened through somebody leaking my name to the New York Times, forcing me to, you know, go public, which put me at risk. I had multiple death threats. Eventually, you know, I was poisoned, I believe twice, definitely one time for certain that I know, where something was sprayed under my door handle that gave me stroke-like symptoms that lasted for 9 weeks. I had somebody loosen the lug nuts on my vehicle before I went on a long trip. And it was just something that, you know, no one who's blowing the whistle should ever have to go through. Not to mention that the FBI agent who was leading the investigation, he targeted me and went on a witch hunt trying to, you know, basically smear my name in my community and amongst, family and friends. It created a lot of stress, for my children and for me and my wife. Eventually, it put us in a position where I didn't feel safe in my home. And so we ended up having to sell our house and move. And that's where we ended up in West Virginia. But clearly our whistleblowing system is broken and there needs to be major reforms done to it. In my case, you know, this was not a matter of me being a disgruntled employee. In fact, I gave up, the highest paid job I ever had to do what I believed was the right thing to do. And you're right. I should have been honored for that, not destroyed for that. But they went after me, and this FBI agent in particular saw to it that I lost my job at the VA. And he And based on conversations that were, brought to my attention by people that he had interviewed and interrogated, the man clearly had bias. At one point, one of the people who he had gone to, which really, this was somebody who was not somebody that I knew very well, but it was somebody who may have had potentially, something negative to say about me. It was my son's ex-wife's father. And so, like, why would he even go bother to talk to this man? Well, because he was looking for dirt. And this man turned out to be not to be somebody who was going to, make up some negative about me. And so he told the man the truth. And when the man got sick and tired of, him with his line of questioning, and he told the man that, he told this FBI agent that he didn't, wish to talk to him anymore there and asked him to leave. As he was going off, stepping off the porch, he said to this FBI agent, he says, why are you guys always trying to destroy people's lives? And the FBI agent turned around to him and said, oh, you just watch too much Fox News. I mean, this is the kind of FBI that is supposed to be non-biased, supposed to be conducting themselves in a professional manner. And by the way, most of these interviews that he did alone. He was not with another agent, so there was no one there, monitoring what he was doing. It was clearly, a rogue attempt at trying to set me up or frame me or, get some dirt on me or something like that. So I eventually did report this to, the Senate Judiciary, and they, and their general counsel, they investigated, and I don't know what the end result of that was, but I can tell you that about a week after I made that, that filed that complaint, all of it stopped. So we have a problem. We have a problem in our Justice Department, and that's not something that should ever be allowed. There has to be, I think you need people who are going to be in there who are going to put aside bias, and that is why there should always be, an extra witness there. You should never have just one FBI agent there, but I think he was violating and breaking, internal rules and policies. So, plus, I know that I was likely surveilled illegally. One of the things that was kind of interesting was that the Daily Caller, now, and I say this, look, my background prior to me going to the FBI is I worked for NSA as detached from MAR-4 Cyber. I was read on to tools like Section 702 of FISA and, and other surveillance tools and surveillance authorities. And I can tell you, I know what the signals look like, and I had all those signals showing up on my phone. So I know I was being surveilled illegally. And the Daily Caller put out a FOIA request to the federal magistrate to ask if she was notified that I was a protected whistleblower before signing off on the search warrant of my home. To which a Clinton-appointed federal judge put a seal on that answer. And then she put a seal on her justification for putting a seal on that answer. I believe that that was corrupt. I think that they knew darn well what they were doing. I think that the justification for the search warrant was illegal. And but yet, I'll never know because of some federal judge putting a seal on it. And that's tyranny. That our Constitution makes it very clear that unless there's probable cause, we're to be free from illegal search and seizure. And yet, not only did they search me, not only did they surveil me, but they also seized all my electronic assets. They went out and, basically leaked my name to the press. There was a lot of things that were done that were illegal and unconstitutional and corrupt. What they did irreparable damage to my family. And caused such anxiety to my son that he passed out while he was on the couch. The only reason I even know about any of this is because we had a moment of attempted reconciliation. But it's just it's my life is too stressful and too political and everything else that he can't be around me. So it's just it what there are certain things that I can let go of. And I can just, forgive. But when you attack a man's family, you try to destroy their family, that's something that's unforgivable.
Nate, hang on to that thought. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to speak with Nate Kane about the nuts and bolts of the wrongdoing that he uncovered. And that wrongdoing involved some very important people. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Валяется и тут, и там. Сотни.
Хочу джилехис сами шем тхова да апексир да информация о пиролапсас.
Саши ши дава да бишем тхова да лет алури ше деги айч араши джилехис диагнозит эрти мама кацигар.
In Guatemala haben die USA die Eingeborenen mit Syphilis angesteckt und daran experimentiert, wie sich das entwickelt. Das sind alles Dinge, die die USA schon längst offen zugegeben haben.
Американцы активно занимаются разработками биологического оружия, а используют насекомых-убийц, что является компонентом биологического оружия.
Not developing biological or chemical weapons inside Ukraine.
Африканська чума свині знову на Сумщині.
Холера в українському Миколаєві. Новий случай ботулізму.
Потім вони будуть просто продавати вакцини і лікарства від цих болезней, які самі ж сюди і привезли.
Sugar high of unipolarity over the last 30 years has actually hollowed out the wellspring of statecraft capabilities within the institutions of the American political system. And it has essentially lived off the vapors of Pax Americana.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with FBI whistleblower Nate Kane. Nate, thanks again for being with us.
Absolutely.
You say on your campaign website that the FBI took a side in the 2016 election. That was the side of Hillary Clinton. I think that has proven to be absolutely correct. First, tell us what illegalities you saw related to Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation. And second, why was a decision made to not pursue cases against Hillary and the foundation?
You know, I didn't necessarily believe the rumors that I had heard right away. I held on to that information for quite some time. You know, I heard that, you know, they were going to basically cover up Hillary's client, you know, crimes and all of that. And I thought, there's no way. You know, how could they get away with that? There's no way. It's too big. But where it dawned on me that what they were saying, because remember, these files had case numbers. They had, you know, field offices that they were being worked out of. And I just, you know, knowing what I knew about the FBI, I didn't think it was possible to, you know, completely cover something up like that because you had different field offices involved and case numbers. You can't just make that stuff go away. But what became obvious to me that that was not the case was when Jim Comey came out in front of the FBI headquarters and he gave that press conference and he said, look, Hillary Clinton has committed all these crimes. She has, you know, had thousands of emails on this email server that were classified. And he mentioned, I think there was, but what really shocked me was when he said that there were 7 email chains with special access programs. Now, John, you know what that means. I know what that means. Most of the world does not. But to have a special access program, when in my lifetime, I've been read on to several of them. And when I was read on to those, these were, you know, basically for the layman's term is above top secret. I don't like that term, but that's the way that most people understand it. It's something that is, even if you have a top secret clearance, you don't have access to it. Even, you know, because you don't have a need to know, and because the information in there is so damaging, you know, to American security if it were to get loose, you know, that it could cost lives and things like that. And this special access program, I don't know what they were, but the fact that there were 7 of them in email chains on an unclassified private server in her basement bathroom of her home in Chappaquiddick. Now, I will tell you, the times that I worked with that kind of information, I was working in a SCIF, and I couldn't even read it at my desk in a SCIF where everybody in that SCIF had a top secret clearance. I had to read it in a closed room, you know, basically a special room designated for reading that kind of material. That's how they didn't want even somebody with a top secret clearance accidentally seeing it as they walked by my desk. So the fact that that would be on a private email server, there's no way that that could be a, you know, a spillage or an accident. You would have to knowingly violate the law and break the law to get that kind of information out. So when he said those things, and I'm listening and I'm going, oh my gosh, they're going to indict her. And he goes, but no reasonable prosecutor would bring a case against her for this. And remember, right around that time, there had just been a case brought against a Navy sailor who was a submariner, and he had had a had taken a picture of his hot rack, which isn't even classified. The hot rack, that's the sleeping quarters. You know, he took a picture of it and he posted it online. And because of that, the guy got like something like 5 years prison. So how in the hell could Hillary Clinton get away with special access programs being leaked onto a server, which then he also, Comey said in that, during that press conference, that there was, they had determined that there was likely foreign adversaries had accessed that server. Well, I reached out to some of my friends and, you know, in the cybersecurity community, and I said, does this sound right? I said, I know what I'm thinking. And they confirmed that they were thinking the same thing that I was thinking, that this box, this server was a Dropbox. It was a way for her to be able to leak information, and it would explain why words were flying around like treason and things like that. So at that point, I knew something, you know, was seriously wrong in the FBI, and it wasn't just rumor. And in fact, my boss, my unit chief, was cussing and swearing in his office, you know, during the, you know, while this was going on television. And I walk over, I had a good relationship with him, and I just walked in and I said, hey, so what's going on? And he said to me, he said, the FBI only investigates. It does not make determinations for indictment. That is not the FBI's job. And so he was pointing out the fact that Comey was making the decision that there was not going to be any indictment against Hillary Clinton, you know, for these crimes. And so that he was violating, you know, policy by doing that. And so I told him, I said, well, I said, do you think that maybe they're going light on this because they've got, you know, and he didn't know that I knew about this other information, but I said, do you think they're going light because they've got other things on her that they're going to bring to light and they're going to indict her for something else? And he says, no, that's not how it works. He says, they're covering this up. And at that point, I knew I had to do something. I couldn't just ignore it.
Nate, you ran for Congress in West Virginia. You were not successful, but you showed very respectably. What's next for you, and where can people find out more about your work?
So, look, this run for Congress was, it was important that I did it, and I was unsuccessful, and largely I think the reason I was unsuccessful was because there were certain assumptions that I made going into this that were just flat out wrong. I thought that, you know, that you could win an election by being a good candidate and working hard and, you know, and getting out there running a grassroots campaign. I mean, I started very early. I mean, we had respectable numbers. I mean, you know, almost 13,000 people voted for me in this district. And, but the fact is I did not have, I raised about $100,000 and that was not enough. My opponents, all of them had, most of them had, you know, a lot more money to run advertising in the last 2 weeks prior to the election. And in the case of my main opponent, Riley Moore, you know, he had raised about $800,000 or maybe more in his own personal, you know, campaign. But he also had $700,000 that was given by a cryptocurrency company into a super PAC that was running ads for him 7 days before the election. So he was able to just blanket the airwaves with, you know, advertisement. And so what it boiled down to is it was hard for, you know, people to know who I was. You know, 13,000, I was able to reach out to 13,000, but it wasn't enough. And so, you know, so what comes next? I mean, I wished Riley well. I have major concerns about him, you know, and especially about his background. He was a, He was a foreign registered agent, and he was a former lobbyist and vice president of the Podesta Group. I think that should concern anybody. And for those that don't know who the Podestas are, John Podesta was Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman. Clearly, 700,000 thrown into his race 7 days before the election, there were people that were nervous, I think, about me being in this race. And I think that, you know, they did not want somebody like me, you know, getting in there. But, you know, they may be able to keep me out of the, you know, out of the Capitol, you know, or out of Congress. But what they can't do is they can't keep me from being active. What this showed me in this experience was that we have a role to play. Whether or not we're elected officials, we've got to take back control of our government, and we have to do our duty, you know, to save this nation and hopefully pass on something to our children, you know, that is, you know, that still maintains and has freedom. Because right now there are people who are working against, you know, our liberties. They're working against freedom. They want to destroy things like private property, things like our civil rights, you know, our right to bear arms, our right to free speech, our right to actually be free from illegal search and seizure, our right to due process. I mean, all of these rights have come under attack under this administration and, you know, and previous ones. You know, but the thing is that we have to fight for those things. And so, so what goes on, what happens now, I am going to be taking my websites, my social media accounts, and I'm going to convert those into, you know, something for me to be able to continue to be a voice. And so I am going to be starting my own podcast. And right now I'm not committing too much. You know, I'm going to commit to 2 days a week. One of the podcasts will be specifically talking about issues here in West Virginia at the state level. And then the other one will be talking about national issues. I'm still also very engaged with a group called the Military Accountability Group. And this is a group that I was one of the original 231 signers. I'll be, you know, also focused on, you know, dealing with this issue of military accountability for those members of, you know, those flag officers that basically forced an illegal vaccine on many of our soldiers. And I'm not talking about the COVID vaccine that was that everybody else took. No, I'm talking about something that was not even approved, that was not even covered, you know, and the courts have already ruled that this was illegal, but there's been no accountability. And so there needs to be accountability, and that includes court martials for those who have done these things. So I'm going to be continually involved. I've got so many things that I can get involved in and can continue to be involved in, you know, to be active. And that's what I intend to do. And then, you know, we'll see what the future brings.
Nate, thank you for everything you've done. Thank you for your hard work and for this interview. This was really, truly eye-opening. I appreciate your time very much. Confucius, the Chinese philosopher, said millennia ago that an oppressive government was to be feared more than a tiger. An American founding father, Thomas Jefferson, the third president of the United States, said that he was not a friend to activist government, for an activist government is always oppressive. They were both right. This is not a new idea. It's thousands of years old. Why is it then that oppressive governments never learn that they are the problem, not the solution to the problem? I don't know the answer to that question. What I do know is that we need more whistleblowers like Nate Kane to keep our government honest. Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. Please follow me on Substack at John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.